Welcome to Marvel Vision, a podcast about Marvel, the MCU, and right now, Fantastic Four First Steps. I'm taking my first steps onto this podcast. I'm Alex.
I'm still crawling. I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
Oh, and you're the you're walking on three legs, right? Like for the riddle. Yeah. I think that's what we're doing here.
Yeah.
Cool.
Anyway.
For those of you who don't know, we're always doing a riddle. Good luck solving.
Always
the rest
be
of
riddling,
them.
As they say.
ABR, that's what it is. We are going to be talking about Fantastic Four First Steps, which is in theaters now. If you haven't seen it, broad spoiler warning here, because we're going to delve into spoilers and our thoughts on the movie, and I'm sure plenty of Easter egg talk, what this means for the MCU, etc. But as usual, let's talk about how we saw it first to sort of give that frame of mind. I do think that's always interesting. I'll throw out real quick. I saw it at a press screening on Monday. As usual, that was pretty muted. But then I went to see it on the Wednesday before it came out with my family at a fan screening where they had like giveaways and stuff. And that was pretty great. Like, it was honestly, I think, including seeing Thunderbolts and Captain America with big groups of fans, the first time that I've heard people like laugh and cheer and clap at a Marvel movie in a really long time. So
did you see like IMAX or 3D or
IMAX 4DX? Both times, baby. And okay. I'll tell you why.
It's important to know that.
It looked good in IMAX. And I saw somebody do a comparison on TikTok, and I hadn't realized, like, they showed the frame, the regular frame with like Galactus looking back at the Statue of Liberty. And
yeah, that was a cool moment.
It's a cool moment. It's missing about half the screen if you're not seeing it in IMAX. Not to be like a big IMAX booster or anything.
Half
like,
the screen, really? Half
it
the
was
screen?
Crazy.
I think that's a little...
No, because it's like cropped to Galactus's head, and then in the IMAX version, you get to see all the way down to his butt, and he's not wearing any pants in that scene,
classic.
Which is
that's
nuts.
Why he's staring at Lady Lib. He's like, "You, what's up? You into this?"
That's how he devours.
Right. He's not
through
the
downstairs mouth.
You know what I mean?
Oh, boy. Yikes, this has gone off the rails fast. I was hoping, like, the Lady Lib would get a power nod from Galactus or something. You know what I mean? A high
she'd
five.
Nod back.
Yeah.
Like in Ghostbusters too.
Yeah.
You think Galactus would be intimidated?
If you see it in IMAX,
flirtatious.
Statue of Liberty nods back.
Oh, wow. What
because of the positive slime, not the negative slime.
Yeah, that's what...
Pete, I ditched you at your showing, which I felt very bad about. I had to hang out with my son, but you saw it in New York.
Which was fun because
it
takes place...
How are the bright lights?
In
Did they
New
blind
York
you?
City. It takes place there, so it was like it was all happening right outside the theater.
It was like 4D,
you know?
Basically.
Yeah.
How was that? Where did you see it? Did you see it? You saw it at the good one, the AMC Lincoln 13, right?
Yeah, man.
Sweet.
Saw the IMAX 3D. You know, I was trying to get it all in there.
Were you so scared because it was so real in New York that when you ran outside?
When I went outside, I was like, holy, oh, okay, we're cool. Yeah.
And then during that point when it happens in the movie, two rats bit you on your feet, right?
Exactly. Yeah, that's awesome. That 4DX. You pay extra for that.
Oh, that's really cool.
They pay the rats, too. Yeah.
And Justin, since you were up in the country, I assume you saw it in the woods somewhere, or how did that work out?
Yeah, I had a Cinderella situation where some birds hung a sheet.
And nice.
Other animals were playing the roles in different costumes and stuff. It was really nice, sort of community theater.
Now, I've heard the problem with the Cinderella is the birds will, like, fly around a little bit, so you got to kind of make sure you're stretching your neck because it's hard to hold this sheet still.
Well, my problem with the birds is they're always trying to dress. They overdress me because I'm going to more of like sort of down to earth family functions.
Right.
Going to a local dive bar. I don't need a tux. Lay off the birds.
They only know classy. You know what I mean?
Yeah. When somebody says a real Cinderella story, what they mean is like, I am too dressed up right now.
Yeah. My glass shoes are going to get fucked up on the walk.
That's what they mean. You hate to scuff those.
You hate to, hard to scuff them without completely blowing them apart.
Yep.
I saw this movie at an IMAX 3D in Montreal.
Ooh.
Up in Canada.
Big
so
time. In French. You saw it
in French. French, yes. Yes. Le Quatre Fantastique, as we all know they are. So that was really fun. I don't
Do
love
they have
the
poutine
3D.
At the movie theater?
Yes. They have poutine everywhere.
That's amazing. I love it.
The post office, you put a...
Did you get one of the poutine buckets at the movie theater?
Yeah.
Exactly. And the bucket was made of poutine, so you eat the whole thing. Oh, you got to eat your way in. That's why they're so collectible. But I saw it up there in English, really enjoyed that. Montreal, great city. So it was nice to see it in a cool town.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Let's talk now, go into general thoughts about the movie. I have a prediction in my head of what you all thought. I don't want to say it because I don't want to tip.
Getting into tarot cards. You're getting into this, man. This is crazy. The new Zalvin is kind of weird.
Most of the day, I hang out in a milk bath with my fellow precogs, and I just predict shit all day long.
Yeah, really cool.
I actually knew that about you. You have that vibe.
Yep. You have that vibe. I knew you were going to say that.
Wow, look at this.
That's crazy. Yeah. Pete, why don't we go to you first? What did you think
about it? Well, I want to hear the prediction, precog.
Should I say it in advance? Here's what I think. Is I think, like, Justin's going to be a little mixed on it. And, Pete, you don't like Reed Richards, so it was hard for you, but you still liked parts of the movie.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Yeah. Is that close at all, Pete?
Well, we'll see.
Pete really holding his tarot cards close to his eyes.
Yeah, we'll see. Justin, you want to go first, or should I go?
You know, that reminds me of our recent Superman podcast where I was the most positive, and I feel like I am perhaps negative on this one. I felt like it was really muted throughout. Ooh. The performances were strange outside of Vanessa Kirby, and Vanessa Kirby, the actress.
Oh, great,
You talking about the robot?
Okay, no, go ahead.
Talk about a robot? But there's a lot to like about it. I love the design and how, like, into the vibe it was. They really captured something. And I gotta say, I feel like this movie coming out so close to Superman is damaging it. It's because I think Superman is better, and this movie is in that same groove of a reset on what we think superhero movies can be. Wow. And I don't know. That's what I think.
Now, Pete, what about you?
Yeah, I thought it was good. I didn't think it was great. I really liked as Zalvin, the tarot spook. I really liked a lot of moments, like the Galactus kind of like shadow on the city. He takes his first steps in Manhattan. That was crazy. So like I really geeked out over the surfing moments with the Silver Surfer and the Galactus stuff. I thought was done really well. And I stood up and explained tape players to all the millennials in my row. So it worked out really well.
Oh, just your
for the robot stuff. Yeah, just my row. I can only do so much. It was a packed theater. Wow. People were yelling at me to sit down.
Everyone else was like, shut up. He's like, I'm talking to my row. Yeah. Shouts to G.
I thought it was good. I did get kind of bored at some points, but overall, I thought the acting was amazing. I thought the casting was really great. I liked the brother-sister kind of dynamic, but really just blown away by the Galactus stuff. And then the first after credits thing is still haunting me. I'm still thinking about it, which was really crazy.
That was really cool and well done.
Yeah.
To paraphrase my good friend Justin Tyler from our Superman review, get out of here, you freaks. This movie was the best.
Oh, wow.
different.
I heard you either really like Superman or you really like this. I heard that's crazy.
To be fair, like, there are some things that I do think are a little janky about this movie, but it really got me. And I think the thing that really got me more than
you
anything
are a family of four, though, too. So this is kind of in your wheelhouse.
It got
the
me.
The Zalvin
We That's what they have say. Been singing that all week. I'm not
oh
gonna
my
lie.
God.
What really got me is the emotional theming of the movie more than anything. I think it absolutely nailed the experience of being a new parent and becoming a parent and what that was like. And it kept hitting it over and over and over again. There were multiple times I got choked up or was straight up crying during the movie, which I was shocked about. And like I said, like plot-wise, critically, I think maybe I have some issues. But from the emotional perspective, it crushed it for me. I was really, really into that. And I love the fact that, like, they held so tight to that theme, you know, not to pit one movie against another. But I had mentioned with Thunderbolts that I had somewhat of an issue with the theming there, that it gestured at the ideas of mental health without ever really finishing those thoughts in any particular way. But here, I think it followed that idea of going from Reed and Sue saying, hey, we're new parents, to, and nothing's going to change, to hitting a point where they're having the birth, and exactly when you have a new kid, whatever your birth plan is, it goes out the window the second the kid comes along. Everything goes horribly wrong. And then they follow that through with the terrifying nature of, oh my God, our whole world is going to change. Everything is different now that this kid is born. And they hit that over and over and over again in the movie. And I thought that was really, really well
done. You know, and a lot of parents say these things, and I'm not trying to say that you say this, I don't know if you do or not, but they say like, oh yeah, you know, my kid saved me. You know what I mean? So, and you got, you know, there's that moment where Franklin saves his mom, brings his mom back to life. So there's all that too. And that this is my favorite Reed Richards, in the fact that like I could relate to him because he was freaking out about being a dad. Like he would, this is something he couldn't solve. He was at a loss. So it was nice to see this Reed Richards. And I thought that was a cool choice. Because they're, for some reason, they're never going to give me the good husband Reed Richards, which I think is insane. But it's this characteristic that they're taking from the comics, and they won't not do for some reason. But anyways, I thought this was like a fun choice to kind of see him struggle with all of it, and just running all the tests, and then kind of finally letting go of it. But man, I agree with you with what you're saying. I mean, you know, I even liked the freaking robot, you know, so it was the family dynamic was great. I thought Ben Grimm was awesome. Natasha Lyonne was great. I mean, it was really just I think a really good cast that worked really well. So, I was kind of impressed with the acting.
So I hear what you're saying, Pete, but I do want to take exception to one thing, and not to jump to this. Natasha Lyonne was great in this movie. Is that what you said?
Because she was
barely in it. I love Natasha Lyonne, but she did not have a role.
I know, and hopefully in more movies we're going to get more of her. But I like this idea of, like, Ben Grimm, who is just this huge force, is nervous around the ladies a little bit. I was like, oh, this isn't the perfect meet cute. Like, relationships are hard, you know? So I liked the stumble there with that. I thought playing the long game, which is great, because you have an amazing actress, and I think maybe it'll pay off in another movie. We can't jam everything into one movie. I think she's an amazing choice, and I love her as an actor, so I saw her, and I was like, yay, she's great.
I agree we shouldn't jam everything into these movies. We should jam a couple things, though. Some things. Let's jam a little bit, because you know who wasn't jamming is Natasha Lyonne. I feel like all of her lines were like, huh, what? What are you doing here? Huh? Okay. They didn't even, like, they got within, like, 3 feet of each other. That's not a meet cue. It's not a meet or cue.
I thought it was great. I thought it was magic.
Very cute. There was clearly a million things that ended up on the cutting room floor, because particularly, like, again, we can probably jump back and talk more broadly about the movie and the bigger plot beats and everything in a second. But that final scene, which came in the middle of the evacuation of New York City, where, granted, Eben Moss-Bachrach, who is Jewish, and Natasha Lyonne is Jewish, meeting in a synagogue as somebody who's Jewish, I was like, cool, this is 1,000 times better than what they tried to do in Moon Knight, so thank you for gesturing at something. But the whole scene, her being like, are you here for spiritual guidance? And him being like, don't think so. And she's like, huh?
That was a
scene that had more to it and was somewhere else, and just like
I like the nothing. Awkwardness of it. I thought it was a nice kind of like,
sure, there was more
two
to that
people
plot
trying
that
but maybe misconnecting. Yeah,
there's a lot of this movie, in fact, that I think was on the cutting room floor. And if we're going to talk about general problems, like, there was a general choppiness because I think they filmed a lot more and had a much longer movie that they cut down to this very emotionally focused movie that really, like I said, resonated with me. You lost things like, we know about this, they've talked about this, John Malkovich was in the movie as Red Ghost.
Crazy.
Yeah, which
to lose that.
They cut. Here's the thing is like,
they did mention Red Ghost a bunch. I was like, why do they love Red Ghost so much? Why are we talking about it?
My guess is that he had a very similar level of plot line to Paul Walter Hauser as Mole Man.
He was great. Come on.
They whittled it down to the point where it would have been distracting to have John Malkovich just show up in an opening montage, and that would have derailed the movie immediately. So I also wonder, I haven't seen anything on this anywhere, but I also wonder if they cast somebody as the Mad Thinker that we just don't know about, because they also mentioned him in the opening montage.
Yeah.
And it's like they're fighting nobody, like there's nobody there. So those things and a lot of other things, like, they talk about, we got to get Galactus to come down to Earth, and that's what we got to do, but they never show why he's down to Earth or how they do that. Again, it feels like there's some scenes that were missing there for expediency, which I understand why they took them out, but at the same time.
Well, and like, I got to give him credit. Like, that's something I at least have been talking about for a while, like, make these movies simpler. And they certainly did that here. But my larger issues with it are that everyone seems, except for Invisible Woman, seems like pretty inert, I found. Like Ben Grimm, his voice doesn't go above like a, I don't know, what should we do? The entire movie. Except for when he says it's clobbering time. He's so even. I was like, make
he's
this.
He's a chill dude, man.
He's, but I just wanted more, you know, he stands there and looks at Natasha Lyonne, but I was like, the guys run by are like, hey, what about us humans on Earth? And that doesn't even get him to do anything.
Again, that very specifically, that's a scene where I was like, oh, there was a whole thing on Yancey Street that they cut out of here, because that scene comes out of absolutely nowhere. Here's my thing about the thing is, like, I felt very torn because I agree with you in the sense that he doesn't have a plot line other than I get to see Natasha Lyonne three times. But I love the thing so much that watching him in the movie, I was just from the level, like, I let myself go to the level of fan of being like, he's just a nice rock man, and I'm really enjoying this. Well,
when he was doing the shave and then he couldn't anymore, I was like, oh, this guy. And I love this
guy. I'll also contrast that with talking about a nerd. The one big downer for the movie was Joseph Quinn as Johnny Storm, which I thought was awful. And that,
what?
To be contrasted with Eben Moss Backrack at the thing, because like he found humor in very tossed off, just being like, I'm just a guy here who's saying some funny stuff every once in a while. And he got a couple of laughs out of me versus Joseph Quinn that was like, it was like nails on a chalkboard. Just
you didn't
did
like
one.
His like the board is not a part of her body. That's it's a separate thing. You didn't like,
I know
that
you
like
thing. That.
Nothing worked for me. Nothing.
Well, he just felt odd. It just didn't.
How about the back and forth with the sister? You didn't like that? I thought that was nice banter.
You know, it's interesting. Nothing worked for me, and nothing includes all of the things.
I'm going to keep trying. I'm going to keep poking at this.
I like it. Yeah. This is going to be a fun exchange.
Challenge.
To give you credit, Pete, I think his scenes with Invisible Woman were better because she was there. And she was great. But even Pedro Pascal, I was like, he was upset a lot, but I was never like, people just weren't having fun a lot. And the way that the movie ended on that car seat joke, I was like, this feels insane.
Sat in that.
I was like, this is, I so feel long. Like crazy. I felt
I was like,
crazy.
This is so long.
It was, and I was like, a movie, so that, was, long a movie that was almost humorous.
It was like that door joke in Superman where you're just like, yo.
Yeah, but that wasn't at the end.
Is,
that wasn't the last
it
moment.
Is, it yeah. is insane to throw that in the last end. I was laughing the entire time, but laughing at the audacity of like ending with a absolutely absurd sequence that just kept going and going, just like the audacity there. But yes, I agree with you. From a rhythmic perspective, I can't believe that happened.
Also, the movie was pretty humorless. Like there were some attempts and there were some like offhand, like, haha. But like
when Galactus called humans bugs, I thought that was pretty funny.
What? That's not a joke.
That's not insects. A
joke. That's him.
That's not a joke.
It's because he's big.
Yeah, I thought that was funny.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
We're different people.
Galactus has always been known as a real laugh riot. You know, he's like
The stuff that I thought was funny. Like that was funny. I agree with you. It was misplaced and insane to have it there, and I couldn't believe it was happening. But there are a couple of funny moments in the movie. Paul Walter Hauser, I think, is very funny.
Yeah, he is.
You don't like him.
I didn't like. I'm fine with him as a person. that
what
he,
about
he,
the
he felt like he felt to me like he knew he it was too winky to me. He walked out, he's like, look at me, huh? I'm the mole man. I'm gonna do some mole man stuff here. And I was like,
I thought cool that was very funny.
I was like, cool it. Be in the movie. Don't be commenting on the movie. It just felt out of place.
Dude, if you're a mole man and you live underground and you're most of your life and you come out to talk some shit, you're gonna be talking some shit, man. You're gonna be saying your name a bunch.
What issue of Fantastic Four features Mole Man who's like, hey, look at me, I'm Mole Man, I don't like you, here's what I'm gonna do.
Speak to yourself in the third person if you live underground, bro. Come on,
that's not comedy, that's attitude. Give me some the mole man featured in The Incredibles has more comedy cred than the scene it concluded in this Fantastic Four movie.
Paul Walter Hauser's delivery, I think, is great. The way that he rolls his lines and gives pauses there.
He gave pauses? That's your comedic punchline?
Yes. Wow, I do think there are comedic pauses there in terms of his delivery. Like, the way that he delivers the line, and I'm forgetting exactly how it is, when they come down, he's like, don't forget to wipe your feet. I'm kidding. It's all dirt. Like, there's a weird pause there that is very surreal and absurd that I thought was very fun. Same thing with the line, and again, I'm paraphrasing here, but the one where he's like, don't look at me, Johnny, I didn't dress you. That also made me laugh a lot, just because, like, what? It's something that I agree with you does not necessarily fit with the tone or the humor of the movie, but at the same time, it's very funny, and it's the sort of thing that I think fits with more of a I think you should leave or modern sense of humor. I thought he was funny. He made me laugh.
What about the tape switch on the robot? You put it in the space tape? Cute. Come on, that's funny.
Yeah, that was fun. That was completely unrelated to what we're talking about. But sure.
We're talking about funny things in the movie.
We're talking about Mole Man specifically.
You guys are describing things. You're like, you know what's fun? The way that the tree was sort of like looking away. It was like the branch was weird shape. Right, guys? Pretty funny, right? Yeah. I was like, have you guys not seen a comedy lately? There's jokes.
His delivery was funny. The moment with the car scene at the end was funny. I will give you that it did not
they
fit
ruined
with the
it.
Humor of the movie.
They ruined it. It went on too long and ruined any funny that it had.
That should have been at the beginning of the movie, I think.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here. American Family Insurance can help protect your dream home for whatever comes next. You can live in your own oasis or your own clubhouse. Whatever you choose, get the right coverage. Save up to 23% by bundling home and auto. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies. 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Because I really like to talk positively for a while. The vibe of this movie was great. Like, and it felt like it was a first step for the MCU into a new direction, which I think is one of the big goals for this movie. So that's cool. The look was amazing. I love the period. I love that they were off Earth. The tone of it was really cool. The way that just everyone loved the Fantastic Four so hard. They didn't try to make it regular New York, except just the Fantastic Four was different. This felt truly like a new universe. That's really cool. I thought the first third of the movie, I thought was just the beginning was great where we met them, and then things slowed down really intensely, I thought, and I just wanted to like everybody more. But once they got to Galactus's ship, I thought this is where the movie just started to move there, and I was still dialed in. The birth
on
the ship.
Can I tell you exactly why? Because I do agree with you there. It's because the beginning of the movie, they're doing great. There are no stakes at the beginning of the movie because they're in charge. It's exactly what they have in that first scene where I will say the rest of my family was like, ooh, I did not like the first scene being there before the montage at all, the one with Reed and Sue where they find out they're pregnant. But I thought that was really smart and an interesting way to start the movie because it is setting up the essential conflict. I know I said this before, but them saying to each other, nothing is going to change. Nothing is going to change. Everything is the same. That's what happens over the first arc. They're in charge of the entire world. Everybody trusts them. They win every fight. Reed has sent the police out to take care of every single gang in the entire world. So there are no problems they need to deal with. So including the point when they rocket off to talk to or stop Galactus, they're like, we got this. This is no problem. It's no big deal. We've beaten everything we've ever dealt with. And I 100% agree with you, because that moment, and the moment where the movie snaps into place for me, is when Reed starts to shake when he's facing Galactus, and he realizes they are completely out of their depth, do not know where they're going to fake. And that leads to a moment that I think has been discussed a lot, not I think, I know has been discussed a lot online, where people have talked about, why do they come down afterwards and give that speech of, well, we told...
He just wants our son.
Yeah, he just wants our son, and of course we said no. Reed is shaken at this point.
Yeah, to say those things out loud, to share that, I was like, what are you doing? That was insane.
He has always been honest with the people of Earth. He's always told them, and they've always backed them. Yeah. They've never turned against them before. And that's what I thought was so great about that, is he's like, well, we're all in this together. You know, and Sue echoes that in the speech later, where she talks about, it isn't just our family, all of us, the entire Earth is the family, which I thought was a really beautifully done speech. That's what he thinks is happening in this moment. He does not realize that everybody's going to be like, no, give him the baby, save the rest of us. Yeah. And again, that shakes his confidence. He doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know how to move forward. And that's a good place to put Reed Richards, that I thought was really, really nicely done.
I agree with you. It's just the promise of that first scene was, I was like, oh, we're going to really get with these characters. We're in this intimate moment. And then we zoomed out so hard that I just wanted more really personal time with them. I thought the time with Galactus really got that. And then the birth scene, like, that was them working together. They hit the family note so hard and so well in this movie. Mm-hmm. But I think because they hit that so hard, we lost a little bit of the individual characterizations.
Yeah, I would also throw out there that I know there have been exceptions, but this is one of the only, like, actual team movies we've seen in the MCU.
Yes.
Because most of the time with the Avengers movies, they're kind of off doing their own thing, and then they all stand in a circle and the camera goes around.
Right. Still a team movie.
Guardians of the Galaxy, we've certainly seen some good dynamics there. Movie. But for the most part, whenever they're like, here's a team, they're not really doing team stuff. They're doing individual stuff one by one. And I thought it was so great, very much from a comic book fan perspective, to just see Fantastic Four being like, we're worked together. We know our dynamic. We know what everybody's good at. We're going to set them up and you knock them down. I thought that was great.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, an opportunity for comedy that I thought was really missed there is, you know, in the beginning, before they left to meet Galactus, Ben Grimm and Johnny Storm were talking about, we'll just punch him if there's a problem. When they see Galactus, I wanted Mr. Fantastic to turn to him and be like, you guys still want to punch him? Like,
right.
You know. But
I would have that would have been an old MCU-style joke they would have put in, which is a little off for the character, but good for the movie. And I could have, with you, Pete, I could have seen a little bit of that, just to give some juice to these characters in the midst of that.
I'll throw something else out at you, and I can't really too intellectually speak about this, but I have seen a lot of people talking about this as well, where they feel like, I've seen a lot of autistic people in particular post about feeling like Reed Richards is autistic representation. They don't say that in the movie, but they do have that, again, I think, wonderful speech, the one that got me really choked up, where Reed is hanging out with Franklin, is like, there's something broken in me, and I've always felt that way, and looking at you, the more I see you, the less I know. That's something to me that I could definitely see people seeing that in the movie, and that might point to the rather serious way that he approaches things throughout, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I liked that moment, too. That was another, like, one of the few moments where I felt like a character was opening up and showing me something internal there. And, you know, if that's a larger choice for Reed Richards, that he has a difficulty presenting his feelings, like, that's a choice they're making, sure. But for the sake of the movie and from, like, I want to be able to see the character in the full 360, and I feel like we just didn't get that with him. And I know the movie's capable of it, because I feel like we got that hugely with Invisible Woman. I feel like we got to experience, every time she looked at the camera, I was like, wow, she's cranking emotion out. And, like, maybe that's a testament to Vanessa Kirby, because she is a great actress. But I feel like it really and it actually helped with the the sort of narrative of the movie, because she ends up being the most powerful. She's the character that goes through the high up and down at the end. So, like, it made sense. She was sort of the one that shone the brightest. But I just, it made them look even a little more sort of transparent next to her, mm-hmm. ironically.
I hear you, but I'm going to disagree about Reed because he is more reserved, because he is more muted. He doesn't know how to say all of those things out loud. And that's what comes out in that Franklin speech, I thought rather beautifully. Instead, we get him trying to express these things. He has intelligence, but Invisible Woman has emotional intelligence. She might not be technically IQ level as smart as Reed, but she knows often more than him because she is able to see inside of him and see the things that he's not able to bring out. That's what really worked for me personally in that relationship with the movie. Yeah. But I will agree with you in terms of, like, Ben Grimm doesn't get an arc, and Johnny's arc was like, I want to go to space, and then he gets to go to space, and then his arc is like, I like to translate alien languages, and that's pretty much
it. Well, yeah, but when you go to space, you're going to fall in love with translating alien languages. Oh, I mean, that's just...
I didn't buy that.
That's basic space travel.
The fact that it was going on in secret, and then it just works out so seamlessly that he speaks to her. I mean, I liked the way that the way it worked with having her come in at the end, Silver Surfer at the end, and not Galactus through. I thought that was nice, and it was a nice surprise there. What do we think of the Shala Baal of having her be Shala Baal?
You mean from a comic fan perspective, not being Doran Rad?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fine. I mean, it was pretty much a one-to-one. It wasn't the sort of thing that, like, It was basically Norrin Rad's story, but with Shala Baal, and I assume they swapped the gender so that there could be a romance, quote-unquote, with Johnny.
But here's what it made me think. Is this, are we going to get more gender swap in the larger Marvel story as we move into multiversality?
Maybe if it feeds the story.
Yeah, for sure, because I think the other part of it beyond romantic with Johnny is they came to this thing late that Shala Baal was also a mother. So because this movie is about motherhood, and like you aptly said, it's very much about a visible woman and following her journey as a mother in terms of giving birth, in terms of raising a child and giving up everything for a child, they're showing us the same thing, not exactly subtly, but like smaller in terms of the real estate of the movie for Shala Baal. So I think that's why it's there. So sure, we could have some more things, but I think Pete's absolutely right. They did it here for the sake of the story, and I think it worked well.
Yeah.
If we could just talk about the elephant in the room real quick, and then I won't have to keep thinking about it.
Oh, boy. What is the elephant in the room?
There's no Marvel flip. They took away the Marvel flip at the movie. They've
done this for the past three movies, though, Pete. They had a different Marvel Studios thing for this Captain trend, America, Alex, Thunderbolts, and now this.
I don't like this trend. I like the comfort of my Marvel flip.
Well, let me ask you a question, not to indulge this too much, but I have been wondering why they're doing this. Like, do you think this in any way, this is too much conspiracy theory, but do you think this points to the muted and shaky nature of the MCU, that they're not being like, let's celebrate all of our stars?
Yes. I think they're like, when you see the Marvel flip in front of a movie with none of those characters, you're like, oh, man. Can I see more of those guys? Maybe.
Where's Chris?
Focus on the comics. Just give me the comics characters in the Marvel flip if you don't want to show the people.
No, but they don't want that either, because they're making movies. Like, that's why I feel like they're, and also they're very actively
before Fantastic Four movie. Show me Fantastic Four comics in the Marvel flip. That's not hard, bro.
Yeah, they don't want to do that. Not to
think too far ahead. Do you think they're not going to do that anymore? But do you think the MCU focused Marvel Studios logo? Yes, we get that. You've been saying that for decades. We're going to get the stars back on Avengers Doomsday? Are they going to go back to that?
I do think that.
Here, because they're in that.
They're in that. So it's like, now it's just a little taste.
Dude, I'm going to walk out. I'm going to stand up, just clap, and walk out for the first time.
You're going to not see the movie?
Yeah, I'll be like, that's all I needed was my flip, and then the next time I see it, I'll go back.
I don't know if your row is going to ride with you as hard on that choice.
Yeah, my row is probably going to be like, yo, what are you
doing? Load the Marvel flip on your phone. when you, the movie starts, just hold it up in front of your
face. No, I don't. You shouldn't have your phone out during a movie.
Well, if you want to see a little flip.
Do you want me to just, like, I'll go see you, and into your ear, I'll go, dun, 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 dun.
Are you going to flip a comic in front of him?
Go,
come on, how, you're half-assing this.
He'll go, Thor, Iron Man, Casimir there. It's all your friends, Guardians.
Yeah, I could smack you in the face with a comic book a couple of times. Would that be good?
No,
good?
I don't want you to hurt the comic.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, don't hurt the comic.
Lots of other stuff to talk about in the movie, I am sure. How do we feel about Ralph Ineson as Galactus? Better or worse than the Cloud from Rise of the Silver Surfer?
Better.
Galactus was better. Awesome.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I mean,
I liked it.
But just showing this, the size, the shadow over the city was amazing. Mm-hmm. His kind of landing and coming up out of the wall. It's just all great. All great stuff, really.
Keep varying in terms of size, though. Like, I couldn't tell whether that was a relative thing or if he really was getting, like, bigger and smaller.
Classic Godzilla, the movie from the 2000s, sizing issues. With that one, famously, where Godzilla's, like, wrecking buildings and then in the sewers somehow. And this one, like, when they first meet him, he is so big. And maybe when he's hungrier, he shrinks.
But also, like, you're seeing him on his eating throne. You know what I mean? So he's probably as big as there. Yeah.
Maybe it's like a Super Mario thing where he needs to eat a planet and he gets bink, 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 big. And then he, when he gets hit,
he turns into an adorable raccoon, you know?
How about when his eyes flash? Big tell in the classic Mike Tyson's punch out way. That's when you punch him, right before his eyes flash.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
I will say, on the same note as Galactus actually looking accurate to the comics, that I know we've talked about the retro future look, but just the fact that they really leaned into the Jack Kirby nature of the world and paying homage to him throughout. They were very blatant with that, with calling it Earth 828, which
his
in
birthday.
Case you didn't know it, yes, was his birthday.
Well,
with the quote at the end.
Yeah,
they tell you at the end. But there were a bunch of other things throughout.
The shot of, the kind of early Marvel comics, with Stanley and Jack Kirby was cool.
That little scene.
That was something that I thought I hallucinated the first time, because I was like, they can't possibly have Stan and Jack working on comics in the middle of that. And sure enough, they did. And they're like, they had, I missed this one, but they had the Watcher on the wall. They also had this Oog Lives panel from Timely Comics before they were doing Marvel Comics, which I thought was awesome.
It was cool.
And while we're talking about, like, Easter eggs and stuff, a couple of things that I'll throw out.
A ton of Easter eggs.
Like, they mentioned a bunch of villains. They mentioned Diablo, the Wizard, Puppet Master. We talked about Mad Thinker. We got to see Giganto very quickly from Fantastic Four #1. But there were a couple of other things that I wrote down. The ship is called the Excelsior, obviously off of Excelsior. And on Yancey Street, there were a couple of stores. There was one called Stanley's for Stan Lee. There was another one called King's, if people don't know. Mm-hmm. King Kirby is what people call Jack Kirby. What else? Oh, one weird one I wanted to throw out at you guys that is not a Jack Kirby or Stan Lee Easter egg. But so they had these fake movie posters everywhere, and one of them on the marquee was Attack of the Fungus, which people think is a reference to The Last of Us because Pedro Pascal is in it. But the other one, they had these posters for this movie Sub-Zero Intel all over the place that seems to be nothing, like a reference to nothing, which is weird.
But also just Attack of the whatever, whether it's,
It's just weird. I was very distracted by it because there's so many shots that there's like posters for Sub-Zero Intel or it's on a marquee or something like that. And I was like, what is this referencing?
Well, that's not an old-timey name either. Sub-Zero Intel Sub-Zero is very modern-sounding.
One thing that I saw was speculation was about Captain America, but that felt like a stretch to me. Two things that were definitely Easter eggs. I don't know if you guys noticed this, but in Times Square, there was Westview Television and Electronics.
Very good.
Which is reference to WandaVision, which Matt Shackman also directed, and also there was a Westview Television repair, I think, in Westview in the show. And then also, I missed this one, but there's a lady who is dressed and has the same hairdo as Agatha Harkness, who runs in when they're evacuating Times Square and grabs a small blonde-haired child, like a weird reference to the fact that Agatha was Franklin's babysitter in the comics. So there you go.
That might be a stretch, but maybe.
The other one is the original Fantastic Four from the Roger Corman version. All have cameos
that is very
in the
cool.
movie, which is awesome that they finally got to be on screen. There's a couple of others that I'm definitely forgetting.
It's wild to me that this movie had, like, it felt like eight actors in it. Eight, like, marquee characters. Like, the TV host, Ted, was a major character because there were only, like, five other, people who talked in the movie.
The funniest one to me was when they gave Natasha Lyonne her own credit at the end with some shot that we never got to see her in.
Yeah.
And my entire theater was like, what? Well,
the other crazy thing, though, was like, we can't get a kiss there. Mm-hmm. But it was just weird that they're.
Anything?
Wait for it, bro. You got to earn it.
Why? What are we waiting for?
Here's the thing.
There's no waiting. There's no mother movie coming.
You get the movie.
There's going to be 18 more movies, dude.
Not necessarily at this point. The Fantastic Four are going to be in Doomsday and then Secret Wars. They are developing, reportedly, a Fantastic Four 2. But at the same time, who knows? That's like 4 or 5 years from now, maybe?
Yeah, but you can't plant seeds and say, well, we don't, you know what I mean?
I'm sorry. I know we're jumping ahead a little bit here. MCU got to stop planting the seeds because most of those seeds are dying in the ground or never gaining roots at all. Like,
wow, dude.
At this point, the movie is all you get, and I appreciate that for the most part. In this movie, they just went for it. There was a point my son got really excited when they were doing the thing where they were going to teleport the Earth, which, by the way, I thought was, like, very fun sequence.
Me too. I really liked that a lot. And I was is this how we're getting the incursions now? I was like, so cool to do that.
That's what my son thought as well. He looked at me, he was like, oh, they're going to go to the MCU. And I was so happy that they did not do that at all. But that scene also was like, that got me. Like, when they were doing that, I was like, oh, are they going to pull it off? I was such a sucker throughout this movie. And I think part of it is because it is in this setting and we don't know what's going to happen with the Fantastic Four or anything in the future with the MCU. It really did feel like, other than Natasha Lyonne, that they were really planting the seeds for Rachel Rosman, the return of Rachel Rosman, Rachel Rosman 3, Tokyo Rosman, et cetera, et cetera.
The Secret War is really a war of wine and roses between the things.
Yeah. But it felt like they were leaving it all on the table to the point that, like, they got me when they were going to teleport, and I was like, maybe this is actually going to work. And then it was such a heartbreaker when the Silver Surfer comes out and destroys everything. Or when Sue dies, like, even knowing she's going to be in the next movie, I was like, they let it go on long enough that I was like, oh my God.
I had dead? The same thing. I was like, in my head, I'm like, Franklin's going to save her. He's of course. And then I'm watching, I'm like, Franklin's going to save her. And then she's like, and then she's not waking up. I was like, holy shit, she's pretty pale. What the fuck? Is she going to die? I was like, Fantastic Three. They're going to get another Sue Storm from another Earth. And that's like, Reed is so depressed. He goes against, but I was like, then you're going to shatter these characters to have that. And then she comes back alive. I was like, okay.
Yeah,
you really went down a wormhole with that.
Other than the CGI baby arms that they did a little bit too much, that worked great.
I
like the whole
good.
Thing of putting the baby on there, that killed me.
Yes,
and then the baby clapping at the end was a really wonderful tension release there. I also think, like, just to keep plussing them up in terms of the metaphor, the fact that she talks about her mother dying and how much that meant to her and how her father tried, and then the movie ends with her literally taking a giant man and pushing so hard through a hole, essentially birthing him into this other part of the universe, and she dies in this form of childbirth, I thought really got me as well.
That's really cool. I didn't think of it that way. That's a nice metaphor to put in there. Though it makes me think, how come Franklin couldn't do that, what he did with Invisible Woman, with the car seat that they're putting in the last moments?
Yeah, I don't know. He chose not to, as Galactus said.
Yeah, he's like...
What else for the movie?
I like watching you
obviously,
guys
there's a lot
this.
Of more other things going on here that we've probably skipped past. I thought, just to get back to what you were saying earlier, Justin, about parallels with Superman, I do think it's weird on a couple of levels. Of one, you have two movies coming out 2 weeks from each other that are clearly very inspired by Silver Age 1960s comics. The fact that both of them have scenes where they're like, let's take the sub-boss and kick them into a black hole where we're going to trap them is weird. So just, I don't think they knew or anything.
But yeah, no.
Strange to have these two come out so close to each other.
Well, and let me draw a line because I agree with you. These capture their Silver Age comic origins really well. What I think Superman did better, and it's unfair to compare these movies. They should stand on their own merits, but
they're their own, you know, separate.
They're technically separate. Yeah, but I just saw them a couple weeks apart, so they're the same to me. I feel like Superman took the Silver Age material and it felt refreshing. It felt new to me, a lot of the ways that the performances were and the way the story moved. While this felt like they took us like a middle run Silver Age comic and they gave it to us. And that's what it is. And that, because that's why I feel like the characterizations are a bit surface for the most part, because that's what Silver Age comics did, because they didn't get into a bunch of character development. It was like, I stretch good. I fire now. I clobber time. Like that's so that's what this did in a very specific way.
I liked the one he was like, I don't want to say it. I thought that was fun.
That was fun. I thought it was good, too.
That really worked. The whole clobbering time bit worked really nicely. Rule of threes right there. But I agree with you about that. I think down to, like, just the rhythm of the movie as well felt like that Silver Age comic. But the other thing that I'll throw out there, not to keep comparing these two movies, is that I think they both did well, that a lot of people call, well, it was Superman, that I haven't seen people call out as much with Fantastic Four, is they're both about earnest hope, which is something that has been devoid from superhero movies for a very long time. And the idea that, like, this utopian world that the Fantastic Four is leading, where they run into some problems with the world and they are dealing with calamity, but ultimately being like, let's all work together and figure this out, really got me. It felt... It's obviously fantasy, but it felt really wonderful. And I do think, same with the why does Reed come down and say everything to people? I saw somebody be like, the president would immediately hop on the phone and be like, kill that baby.
Yeah.
And yes, you're right, but that's the fantasy of it. We are watching
kill the
fantasy
baby.
Of it.
Galactus wants, okay, we killed him. What?
Oh, I messed up. I also am not 100% convinced that there are any presidents or world leaders other than the Fantastic Four on this Earth.
Another thing I liked that they made the world truly about the superhero on it, which is what I think would happen in a world where there were superheroes, would be like, well, they're in charge of
it's
everything.
It's pronounced in a world.
Nice.
Yes.
Should
we, if there's nothing else specifically to say about the contents of the movie,
One of the things where I was like, I don't know, is like Sue Storm's like slowly pushing Galactus out of the way, and I was kind of like, I feel like he could, you know, do something. It just felt like very kind of, I get it, like, you know, it was very dramatic.
Pete, you ever trip on something?
No, all the time.
You can't stop. What's your, because I feel like for that whole sequence he was like, whoa. Like when
but it's
thing
just like the
building.
Whole time he's like, he eats planets, he's all powerful, but don't lightly push him because,
I mean,
man, he
I
falls.
I feel like
he's
I just
top.
Explained thematically what they were doing there.
Yes,
but at the same time, the entire team is working against him. He's already been attacked several times. And it's really just showing us how strong Sue is. Plus, you get that great moment with Ben being like, I got you, Sue's, and bringing down the building, which I thought was like very classic Fantastic Four.
It was cool. But I will say, I was surprised how little everyone else had to do in that sequence. Like, Ben knocking those little, he knocked down four posts, like, it's good. And Johnny's just like shooting fireballs randomly around. I was like,
Can we talk about, though? I know I've been more positive about the movie. Can we talk about their very goofy plan to be like,
so
take our
basic.
Baby?
Yeah.
put him in the middle, and then blind him like a little bit, and switch the baby with another bastard.
I was like, this is also Reed is standing next to Galactus baby. With a lever, being like, I was like, at least hide the lever. Even Wile E. Coyote knew to hide around the corner from the Roadrunner. And Reed Richards is like, how we do it? Did we trick him yet? I was like, guys, please. It was crazy.
It made me laugh because, again, like, maybe it's getting back to the Silver Age thing, but it was very, just from the perspective of, well, we're watching this in 2025, this is very silly. But it also led to that fun moment. I loved Herbie so much. And that fun moment where Herbie is singing the lullaby to Franklin.
Beep,
it was
beep,
like,
beep, 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 beep.
It was like, well, very fun. Good stuff. Very enjoyable. Herbie and Rachel Rosman spinoff coming to you in 2020.
Herbie's going to move in on Rachel. Yes. Easy to have a connection with her. You just have to stand near her three times.
How
she falls in love.
Wait, while we're talking about Rachel Rosman and Yahtzee Street, those black and white cookies that Ben Grimm got looked gross.
Yeah, he dumps them out like they're clothes.
What is going on? Bleh. There's no frosting on them or anything.
He's
terrible.
Got rocks for hands. Take it easy.
He's got rocks for taste buds. I think.
I know. They keep talking about how good the cookies are. Like
they looked crumbly and old.
Nothing.
One other comparison, though. These movies, Superman and Fantastic Four, Silver Age, blah, blah, blah. They both made about the same money at the box office.
So you know what that means? More movies that channel Silver Age comics. That's what people want, and there are no other lessons to take from this.
That's exactly right. Good, good, good.
Yeah. What do we talk about? Why don't we segue into talking about the end credit scenes? We do get a setup earlier in the movie, another, like, not exactly an Easter egg, but I thought, like, a nice job of kind of teeing it up. We get to see that Latveria is not at the Future Foundation.
Yep.
I couldn't quite understand this both times, but there's a delegate that's trying to talk to Sue, and she disappears. Was that the Latverian delegate?
I don't know. I didn't get that. Was that part of the movie where I was like, sort of, it checked me out so hard because I was like, this doesn't make sense. What is all this talking? Everyone's like, we need Sue to do it. I was like, Sue needs Sue to do everything at this moment? And I guess that ended up being the theme of the movie. But that part of the movie was a bit opaque. So I would say no. I thought the moment to remember was just the empty Latverian desk. But that's all I can tell.
Yeah. Actually, sorry, that just reminded me talking about things that Sue was doing. The one part where I was like, I'm fine with them not going realistic on this. I'm glad they did it, but it definitely took me out of the movie, is when Sue is giving birth in zero G and she kicks off her pants and then everybody's like happily standing next to her with her pants off. And then also I was like, I don't know, the placenta's coming out. It was like, 1 second, and that's going to be gross.
Nice. And you stood up in the theater and said that too, right?
Just to Pete's Row. I went over to Pete's Row and told them, they're like, by the way, we appreciate all this commentary. Thank you.
Well, I saw it in 40X and the placenta did come out.
Oh, it did?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
I check that out.
It's a really? Another half.
They do that
of
for every movie, though, honestly.
Yeah, it feels a little done, 40X.
I'm just seeing Smurfs. I don't need the placenta to come out.
I did wish they switched the order of the end credits. Because I feel like it would have been cooler to end it on Doom's thing instead of the kind of like, bam, 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 bam.
Well, they want everyone to see it.
So let's talk about this. So we get this mid-credit scene directed by the Russo brothers on the set of Avengers Doomsday. Interesting little note that I saw in one of the interviews. They actually redid and reupholstered the Fantastic Four set, so it does look different than it did 4 years earlier.
They did a good job.
We get this older Franklin. They're reading Hungry, Hungry Caterpillar. And then talk about reading Origin of the Species, and instead, what is the book they see? I Saw a Fly or something like that.
I think that's right.
And all of those books are about, like, in different aspects, evolution or growing up or whatever. So that's what's going on with Franklin. He's a cosmic power, etc. And then Sue comes around the corner and sees Doom. Turns out, which this is crazy to me, during interviews at Comic-Con, they clarified that, that was Robert Downey Jr. in the Doom costume.
I thought the same thing. Felt unnecessary.
Yeah. Why?
I was like, if that's the case, do another step and show us his face, because
we don't see his face. He's famously faceless. But I thought it was weird. He was talking to Franklin.
His
he had
mask
his mask
was
off,
bro.
He's like, hey, Franklin, you want to see something fucked up? Look at my face. It's so messy.
But it's not going to be. Like, there's a
that's why I was like, is he going for the scare by taking it off? Or is he trying to be feel like he's...
No, I mean, I think the face touching was like a little bit for the comic book fans because we know what's going on with his face. They didn't show Robert Downey Jr. because I think that would have been so distracting at the end of the movie for people who don't know about his casting. There is a theory going around that Franklin fixes Doom's face, and that's how we get to see Robert Downey Jr. throughout the movie.
Smart.
And that's what's going on there. But also like,
I think a lot of people online saying that could be MF Doom.
Mm. Oh. A lot of people.
He died.
Yeah, a lot of people. He did, yeah, RIP.
Oh, wow. So Franklin brought him back?
That's right.
That would be quite a twist.
Because Franklin, as he's getting older, loves hip hop. So he's like, you know.
Yeah. I hope he used AI to bring him back. That would be really cool.
Yeah.
What do we think about this? I was surprised how much that post-credit scene got me, particularly because none of the previous post-credit scenes this year have gotten me in any way.
Agreed. And I think it's because they were coy with the information. Learning the lesson from the original phases of the movies, they gave you something, but they didn't give you everything. They just gave you like, hey, we got to get together. Or like, it was just like a nod, and seeing that cloak was just the right amount, and it was scary. It was played like a horror reveal, which I thought was also very smart because it was a little bit breathtaking.
Yeah. I was also immediately after, like, even you know what's going to happen, and you know the Doom is going to be there, so there is that inevitability there, like you're saying, the horror movie. But there was also a tinge of disappointment that I had almost immediately after because I realized, oh, I really like this world, and I really like this 60s future world, and the next two times we're going to see them are Doomsday and Secret Wars, and there is no chance they're going to be like, back to our 60s world by ourselves at the end.
Yes.
That's just not going to happen.
But maybe for the next Fantastic Four movie.
That's exactly the opposite of what I just said.
Yes.
I know, and I'm disagreeing with you.
But here's what I think. What I think they'll do is that sequel will be the Baxter Building will be that world, and they'll preserve all of that, and it'll be about them coming into conflict with the more modern, like, the thing will be on Yancey Street, and be like, hey, everyone here's mean. Oh, Rachel, we have the same amount of connection in that we see each other three times once.
Yeah, but the cookies might be better, so that's the good thing.
True.
And then we do get that cartoon at the end, which is fun, but let's talk about what we think is next. Why don't we go to our vision board, since we're kind of already there.
But you guys weren't upset by that? I just felt like that last sequence was like...
It's fine. You get your taste.
No, it's cute.
You get your taste of the future, then you get your fun. That's
and we saw it earlier in the movie. It's also done in the same style as the 1960s cartoon, which I thought was cute. I didn't have a problem with it. You could have a serious one and then a fun one.
Yeah. I just wish they would have reversed it because my mind was so blown by the Dr. Doom. I wasn't into fun. I was like, holy shit.
You wanted to have your mind blown again.
I just was like, give me the cartoon first and then blow my mind. And then walking out of the theater going, wow. Instead, I was like, the fuck?
Well, and you don't like cartoons, pretty famously.
No, I love cartoons.
Well.
My vision board, I mean, yes. Sorry to jump to that, but the thing is,
we're talking about nonsense, Justin.
Yes, I'm familiar.
Please, get us back on track.
The thing is, we know a piece from the end of the Thunderbolts post-credit where we see the Fantastic Four ship coming to Earth.
Right.
We do. Here's my theory on that. This is probably going to be wrong. I think that's Doom and Franklin, not the Fantastic Four, is what we're going to find. I think we're going to find that, like, just to potential spoilers here, but we've definitely talked about it on the podcast before, in Secret Wars by Jonathan Hickman and Asad Rabish, and the lead up there, there's a whole thing where Dr. Doom is taking around the Molecule Man and trying to save the multiverse, which is being destroyed by incursions. And ultimately he does, saving little bits of each of it and changing it into this planet called Battle World, this patchwork planet, where he's just like tweaked a couple of things so that he's God now and he's married to Sue and Reed Richards isn't there and all this stuff. And it's all powered by Molecule Man. My guess is that Franklin Richards is taking the place of Molecule Man in that story. They're probably going to change some other things as well. But whatever is going on with these incursions, I think Doom knows about them, has decided, similar to Iron Man, that he is going to save the multiverse and has realized Franklin is the key to that. So he needs Franklin. He's going to take Franklin, escape the Fantastic Four's universe, probably as it's crumbling and being destroyed, go to the MCU, which is the prime universe, and try to remake and save things there. So that, I think he's going to take the spaceship.
That's a little different from what I had, because I had that Rocket Raccoon gets drunk one time and then comes down and steals Fantastic Four's ship.
Could be that.
Both could be right.
The other thing that's probably going to play in a big way is we get the introduction of the bridge here, which is the teleportation device, which is used in a different way. But in the comics, the bridge is a multiversal mirror and portal that Reed Richards uses ultimately to join up with the Council of Reeds. Again, this is like crazy speculation, but I think Doom takes Franklin out of the spaceship, escapes to the MCU, and Reed figures out a way to use the bridge to travel between universes, potentially taking their entire Earth. So we get like very Crisis on Infinite Earth thing, but also I think it was in Secret War Zero where we get these two Earths hanging out next to each other,
yeah,
the MCU Earth and the Fantastic Four Earth, potentially. That's how they go to take them back.
I agree with all of that, but I want to offer sort of a reverse vision board.
Sure.
Remember when this is all about Kang? Uh-huh. Isn't that crazy to think about that?
There was a roundtable that Kevin Feige did before Fantastic Four came out, which, not to slag him off too much, was just like so full of so much cope and so sweaty, where it was like all the answers that he was giving people about where the MCU went wrong was just like, yeah, there's just too much homework. People don't like homework. And we had too many TV shows and movies. We were like, yeah, it was that. But also a lot of the stuff was bad, guy. Yeah. And none of that, absolutely none of that was turning around. When it came to Kang, he said this thing. He never referred to Jonathan Majors by name, but he called him the Kang actor. And wow. He was basically like, even before Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania came out, we were like, you know, Kang's not quite big enough. We need a really big villain, and it's got to be Doctor Doom. And I was like, absolutely not.
Yeah, that's a crazy lie.
Yeah, you were, I'm sure, talking about how you could bring Doctor Doom into things. You were maybe floating the idea of what if we brought back Robert Downey Jr. But they were all in on Kang up until it went wrong.
Yes.
So how do you think, do they deal with that at all, or are they done with Kang and have moved on at this point?
I think,
do they have a thing where it's just the Council of Kang is dead and Dr. Doom is standing over them?
Yes. I mean, no, I actually don't think they're going to do it. I think it's just
they're not going to. Yeah.
So,
it is crazy, though.
Sucks.
Yeah.
Yes, totally different story, totally going forward. And the good news about it is, as we're taping this, they are 3 months into production already on Avengers Doomsday. Rebecca Romijn, who's going to appear as Mystique from the X-Men movies, gave an interview at Comic-Con where she was like, yeah, I don't think they're done writing the script yet. Seems like things are going real well.
I know. She's like, I think I'm done. I don't actually know. Oh, God, I said too much.
Which, mind you, this is kind of how Marvel has done things for years at this point.
Yeah,
they've
no
gotten
notes.
Away with it a lot of times.
Because,
but I kind of think they gotta stop.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Never gonna
Makes
stop.
Me worried, man. Makes me worried.
Yeah, same.
Well, I mean, it started because it was like, hey, let's get some comedy people, let's get some improv people, let's make some magic, let's capture magic with these characters, and it did great. It was refreshing, it was fun, it was a cool idea, but now there's so much weight on all the things they're trying to do, you can't do that anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they've officially confirmed this, but Doomsday and Secret Wars probably together are the most expensive production of all time. So doing that with, like, 5,000 actors in it and moving pieces, you got to set it beforehand. You got to figure out, like, to get back to what I was saying originally about Fantastic Four, the thing that worked to me about the movie is, like, what is your emotional theme? What are you dealing with? What are you trying to say with this movie? And what
but that's not how Robert Downey Jr. works now. He shows up and he becomes the lines.
I mean, maybe
they
got it. Maybe they've got that and they're just, like, filling in the pieces on the side, I guess. But
no,
I don't think they are.
Here's what I think. They're going to spend all the money they made on all of the movies before on these two movies and break perfectly even, wash their hands and be like, we did it. Bye. And they're going to get on a ship and sail into wherever the hobbits go at the end of Lord of the Rings.
Gray Gardens?
I think it's Gray Gardens. With little Edie, and Gardens. She's like, I'm the Yankee Doodle Dandy. Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Really, that's the post-credit scene on Secret Wars.
Yeah. I can't believe it, but we just got to one of the craziest places we've ever been. And let's live there. Let's live there.
Well, listen, we are going to be back here very soon because Eyes of Wakanda, which was supposed to debut at the end of August, is now debuting later this week on August 1st. So very excited about that. Meanwhile, if you want to support this podcast and all the podcasts, we do patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about Marvel, Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice.
So you just say Sizzler.
Apple Sizzler or Outback Steakhouse, wherever you want to talk to us.
Bloomin' Onion.
Come on down. We only eat there at like middle tier chain restaurants is kind of where you can mostly find us.
Yeah.
Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, stay marvelous.
I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.